Okay, good evening, everybody. We're ready to call the regular meeting of the Clinton Township School Board to order. They'll rise for a flag salute. Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to read something first, apologize. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on April 25, 2012. A, by faxing to 5 newspapers designated by the board, that's the Huntington County Democrat, Huntington Review, Star Ledger, Courier News, and Express Times. B, posting on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration office, and in the Clinton Township School, and in each Clinton Township school. C, filing with the clerk of Clinton Township.
Mr. Freda?
Present.
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Mr. Malloy? Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. Sturgis?
Here.
Mrs. Sullivan? Mr. Dinka? And Mrs. Kresge?
Here. Okay, and now can we all rise for a pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this time, under President's comments and reports, I would call Maria Grant, please, to present our presentation on the superintendent's merit goals.
Good evening. And I want to apologize to everybody in the audience. I need to work the machine at this at the same time, so I'll try to do the best that I can to make sure I address you as well as the board. This evening, I am going to present merit pay goals established for Dr. Clark, our superintendent of schools for Clinton Township. The process for establishing these merit pay goals have included the Board of Education, Dr. Clark, and the Executive County Superintendent. During the presentation, I will review the following categories: the state initiation of merit pay, state guidelines for merit pay, the importance of merit pay, components of the merit pay structure, process for developing Dr. Clark's merit goals, and we're going to review the merit goals and sliding scales that have been established for this merit pay. So let's get started with a little bit of background on the genesis of merit pay here in New Jersey. In the spring of 2010, Governor Chris Christie announced a salary cap for New Jersey superintendents. His goal for initiating the salary cap was threefold. First, stop the automatic increases for salaries for superintendents. Second, to gain control of those superintendent salaries that were not in line with the responsibilities of specific superintendents. And third, to redirect superintendents' focus into two areas that he felt were most important: student achievement and fiscal responsibility. According to the governor, increases in pay for superintendents would now be earned based on student performance and fiscal improvements. To achieve these two state-driven mandates, Governor Christie established a merit pay structure. So let's go over the guidelines that the state's provided to districts to follow regarding merit pay. So first, any proposed merit goal increase must be based on successfully achieving key educational and financial objectives. Defined merit pay goals expire after 1 year after they have been defined. And a new set of goals will be defined or can be defined for the following year. The state has determined that the maximum amount that a superintendent can get over their base salary is 14.99%. But it is the Board of Education that decides how much of that 14.99% the superintendent receives based on performance. Merit pay goals must be approved by the Executive County Superintendent. And then, after the year expires, the Executive County Superintendent must also approve the amount of merit pay awarded based on performance. Merit pay is not pensionable. There are two major components to merit pay. First are qualitative goals, and you're allowed to have two qualitative goals, and the superintendents can be compensated up to 2.5% of their annual salary for each of those two qualitative goals. There are also three quantitative goals that the superintendent is responsible for, and the superintendent can get up to 3.3% of their annual salary per quantitative goal. Now, the importance of merit pay for superintendents in the state of New Jersey. Governor Christie wants to make sure that we reward exceptional results in two areas. Again, student achievement and fiscal management. According to Governor Christie, he wants to use merit pay to reward dynamic, exceptionally high-performing superintendents who exceed expectations set by the Board of Education. And Governor Christie wants to retain high-performing superintendents in the state of New Jersey and wants them to stay within their district for long periods of time and not jump to other districts for higher pay. I'd like to now take a moment to go over the process for developing Dr. Clark's merit pay goals. Now, we followed the New Jersey guidelines for merit pay. We identified and listed challenges across the district based on district surveys and board self-evaluations that we did with the New Jersey school boards, anecdotal evidence and information we received by speaking with people throughout the community over the course of the year. And Dr. Clark, as well, has also spoken with many members of our community and members of our staff. We also use New Jersey Ask Scores to help determine where our priorities needed to be. Challenges were then prioritized based on their impact on student achievement and financial impact to the district. The board then tied the highest priority needs to quantitative and qualitative goals. A district challenge statement was written for each goal, followed by a merit goal designed to help us overcome that particular challenge. The percentage increase per quantitative and qualitative goal was established and determined by the county's under county's direction. Dr. Clark then worked with Board of Education committees on wording specific goals with administrators and with administrators on actions tied to those goals. Once the goals are approved by the Executive County Superintendent and the Board of Education, the process of these goals will be reviewed by our Board of Education four times during the year. In November of this year, January, March, and 30 days after we receive the New Jersey Ask Scores for the district. In this portion of the presentation, I'd like to now review each of the five merit goals that were approved just today by the Executive County Superintendent. As I briefly mentioned before, each goal has listed a district challenge and then a merit goal designed to overcome that specific challenge. The first two qualitative goals focus in this manner. Well, I should say the first qualitative goal focuses on improving effective communications between the school, between the superintendent, the school, and the community. To address this district challenge, the following merit goal was designed, and I'll just read it the exact same way that it was approved from the county superintendent. To rebuild community trust in the superintendent and the Board of Education, communication decision-making processes as measured by frequency, appropriateness, and effectiveness of activities listed. This goal is set for the 2012, all the other goals I'm going to review, 2012-2013 school year, and represents a maximum of 2.5% of the base salary. The second qualitative goal. Our district challenges to improve the standardization of district staff evaluation and hiring process. And to address this district challenge, we've established this merit goal with Dr. Clark and the Executive County Superintendent. To implement the improved standardized hiring process by June 2013 and complete the pilot of teacher evaluations by July 2013 in readiness for full implementation by September of 2013 to ensure a consistent and open process for the purpose of instructional improvement, professional development, and the evaluation of the staff. Now let's move on to the quantitative goals. Our district challenge, or our first district challenge for quantitative goals, addresses the need to improve academic excellence and student achievement. And to address this challenge, we've established this particular merit goal. First, to demonstrate a 5 percentage point increase in the combined proficient and advanced proficient New Jersey AS mathematics scores for the grade 7 cohort in 2012 to grade 8 students in 2013. The average increase in this category over the last 3 years was 3 percentage points. So this will be the baseline of the sliding scale that I'll talk about in a few moments. Second quantitative goal also deals with improvement in student or academic excellence and student achievement. This particular goal states that we're going to demonstrate an 8 percentage point increase in total number of proficient combined with advanced proficient New Jersey AS language arts scores for grade 3 cohort from 2012 to 2013 with our fourth grade. The average increase over the past 3 years in this category was 2.5%. I'm just taking it back, 2.5 percentage points. So this will be used again for the baseline or a sliding scale, which I'll go over in a few minutes. I just want to briefly add that all of the goals we're reading here and have been approved by the county superintendent are a big stretch. They're not goals that are going to be easily obtained at all. Dr. Clark fully supported this stretch of goal. And the board did as well, but I just wanted to make sure to mention that these are big stretches for our district. The third and final quantitative goal supports fiscal responsibility. And to address this particular district challenge, we created this merit goal. To generate increased district revenue in the 2012-2013 school year above the 2011-2012 benchmark of approximately $27,000 from sources other than federal and state aid and local taxation. This will be coupled with cost savings from 2012-2013 budgeted expenditures in realized net amount exceeding $100,000.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
There's a word left out. I just want to make sure it's in there. Okay. To generate increased district grant revenue.
I apologize.
Okay, that's the baseline for 27. Thank you.
The Board of Education will evaluate Dr. Clark's performance on a predetermined sliding scale for each particular goal and merit goal that we've outlined. Now, after evaluating her performance at the end of the year, the board may decide that she received a smaller payout than the maximum payout. If each of the merit goals are reached, Dr. Clark will receive a maximum of $23,234.50. Of a one-time bonus that is not. Now, the following segment of this presentation is designed to review predetermined sliding scale for each qualitative and quantitative goal that I've just reviewed. Each sliding scale, based on performance, allow the Board of Education to appropriately distribute merit payouts. You'll notice that with each of the goals, the closer Dr. Clark comes to achieving individual milestones, the more significant the payout becomes. Merit payouts on the lower end of the performance will not yield high merit payouts. So let's begin with the first qualitative goal. As you remember, the first qualitative goal dealt with improving communication. So effective communication by the superintendent will be evaluated in the following way: her visibility, written communications, her visibility in schools and at public events, written communication, and public presentations. Some of the deliverables that have been outlined to make sure that we're improving effective communications are for Dr. Clark to write in the Clinton Township newsletter every single month, delivering information on a variety of topics for the Clinton Township School District. No less than 5 public presentations on school choice, budget timelines, how a budget is put together, and having multiple budget information meetings December through March. All presentations will be posted on the website and the PTA community and town budget presentations as well. Each of the goals that I mentioned before, so her visibility and communication, et cetera, will be measured on her frequency, her appropriateness, and her effectiveness of the activity by the Board of Education. And after each informative scheduled meeting, for example, we will have a formalized survey to go out to those that attended, and we will evaluate the appropriateness and effectiveness of that particular meeting. Another way we will collect some data to be able to evaluate the performance of this goal is to administer and evaluate the superintendent's visibility and communications as a board. Results of the survey will fall into the following scale. There will be three answers. It exceeds expectations, met expectations, or did not meet expectations. So if she exceeds expectations, there will be 100% of the payout, which is 2.5% of that particular goal. If it met expectations, or she met expectations, it's 50% of the 2.5% goal. If we move along to the second qualitative goal, I'm sorry, that's not readable. I apologize for that. There are 3 deadlines that are associated with this particular goal. If she reaches the first deadline, she'll get 25% of the 2.5%, and that's January 2013. The second deadline is June 2013. That's another 25% of the total payout. And then 50% of the payout if she meets the third goal by July 2013. If she meets each of these 3 goals, it's 100% of the payout.
Maria, why don't you
extras? Will it help if
why don't you read what they are, what it is,
sure.
So
that
you can adjust it?
Sure. I can give mine. I can give this a bunch of times.
I thought they all had them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you need more?
It'll be online tomorrow.
Do you need more?
Somebody had asked if I would read what the 3 deadlines associated were. The first deadline is to standardize the hiring process by January 2013. The second is to implement hiring process by January 2013, and implement the hiring process by June 2013. And then the third deadline is to complete the pilot and have teacher evaluation working by July 2013. Now shifting to the quantitative goals, and again, I'm sorry this didn't show up, but you can see it in the handout, we have 5 ranges of performance for this particular quantitative goal. This goal focuses on improved student achievement relative to 7th and 8th grade math. Each of the 5 ranges has its own range of payout. So for example, we know that the average increase is 3 percentage points for 7th grade to 8th grade over the last 3 years. If we only achieve 0.0 to 3%, there is no payout for this particular merit goal. But you can see as you go up the curve here, a 3.1 to 3.5 percentage point increase would then give a 0.1 to 0.8 percentage merit point payout. And you can see the more achievement that occurs closer to the goal, the steeper the curve becomes and the higher the particular payout. The second quantitative goal is very similar. This one discusses language arts. There, in this particular sliding scale, there are also five ranges with five ranges of payout. So for example, 0 to 2.5 percentage point increase, there will be no merit pay payout because that's what our average is right now. And we want to increase that. And again, you see the higher up the curve, the more the payout. Moving to the final quantitative goal, was to increase district grant revenue. So I got the grant this time. I didn't get it the first time.
How could you forget the word grant?
increase district grant revenue and cost savings. There really is no sliding scale here. We either achieve the $100,000 and there's 100% payout, or there isn't going to be a payout. So in summary, we've talked a little bit about why we have merit pay. We talked about the state guidelines for merit pay, the importance of the merit pay, the components of the merit pay structure, the process for developing Dr. Clark's merit goals and review of those, and we talked a little bit about the review of the merit goals and the sliding scales for the payout.
Rick, quick question. This will rightfully so be posted on the web, new and improved website.
Tomorrow.
Good. So everybody, good.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
No.
Thank you.
Maria, thank you very much.
Sounds good.
Okay, next, Dr. Clark. Are you ready for the superintendent's report?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here. I love to see an almost full house. The one thing that I wanted to make sure I shared with the board, because it's new news, so to speak. We all know that the new tenure law was passed by our legislature. And in that, because of the wording, we already were doing, we're working on a pilot, as you all know, for teacher evaluation. However, we got news about a week ago, that we also have to have a pilot for the principal evaluation. That was not supposed to happen for at least another year. So the state fast-tracked this, and now we're going to have to submit a rubric for the principal administrator evaluation by December 31st. So the district did not plan on that. None of the districts did. We thought we had, there are pilots that were just being started now. Those pre-pilot pilots. So this is a bit of a surprise. I'm going to say, along the lines of something that we didn't expect. So now we have to work on this before December 31st. So it is a new priority that the state is requiring of us. And we'll look at it in connection with the teacher pilot to make sure that we're coordinating the two in a positive way. But our director of curriculum and I will be working on that with the principals. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. Is that all for your report?
Mm-hmm. Okay. At this time, we'll have our first public comment. That will be for agenda items only, please. And please, as anyone approaches the microphone, please be aware of our three-minute rule. According to our bylaws, we do have a three-minute speaking limit. Thank you.
Good evening, Nick Corcadillis, 73 Old Mountain Road. I want to call your attention to your action item on page 12. 13 PC 010, relating to your first reading of the bylaw 0164.1, conduct of board and core values. There's no copy of this bylaw provided in the minutes. Is there a copy provided this evening for the public?
I have a copy here, yes.
Well, my point here is that it would have been useful for the public to have access to this before you do a first reading, especially in light of the fact that you developed your core value statement at two board retreats, which were legal public meetings at which you violated the Open Public Meetings Act because you failed to provide for public comment. I would suggest to you that you table this until the public has a chance to actually read what the core value is. Thanks, I appreciate the copy, but I think this is something the public needs to see, not just me. And certainly can't read this during my 3 minutes and comment on it. So I would suggest to you, again, in light of the fact that you violated the Open Public Meetings Act at the meetings where you put these core values together, you give the public time to take a look at what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on agenda items? Okay, thank you. And at this time, we'll have our first recognition of the public. Anyone else?
Lana Brennan, 21 Fawn Drive, Lebanon. I have one that's sort of agenda and one non-agenda, so I decided to get up at one time. I have a question on, where is it? Action item 13, FF025 on page 5, the $20,000 settlement from 206. I didn't live here at the time, so I'm just interested in what that is referring to and what it has to do with and costing us $20,000. And my other question, just because it's a little one, is do we get rid of the virtual backpack? Because when I went on to the new website, there was no, I searched it in the search box, I looked for it, I did everything I thought I could to find it, and it usually is on the front page of my Spruce Run or my district, and the district website, so I just couldn't find it.
Let me look into that. I know you can also subscribe to different things. Did you sign up for the subscription?
Yes.
Okay. I will check into it, all right?
Okay.
If you want to send me an email tomorrow,
okay,
I'll get back to you then, all right?
And also,
thank you.
If we could also figure out what we're dealing with, because I know we used to have the Tuesday tie-ins. That was really helpful with the letters from the principal, for at least for me, knowing what's going on in the school at the younger age level. And I know the Friday ones sort of do that, except it doesn't have like the list of all the new handouts or something that's going on in the community attached to the bottom, which is in the virtual backpack.
I know the Tuesday tidings will be on the website,
okay,
and you can actually subscribe to them, so you can get them whenever you want. So if you want just one school or them in bulk, all at one time, different times, you can do that.
Okay, because I just did the bottom one, and I just wrote my email, and I don't know what I signed up for. So
okay,
I'm going to get something.
All right.
And then just the question about the $20,000 house.
Okay.
We're going to report on that, Ms. Brennan, during the Facilities and Finance Committee report.
Okay, I didn't know what that was. Thank you.
That's okay.
Anyone else at this time?
Hi, Nick Orgadillis again, 73 Old Mountain Road. The board members have made comments recently to the effect that they're tired of the matter of the allegations that Mr. Dinkup has made against two board members. And imagine my surprise when I obtained the Public Records Act request, a copy of the executive session minutes of March 29th, in which false allegations were made about myself in what the prosecutor has already notified him was an illegal executive session. Since the board passed the resolution on May 14th to prevent further violations of the Open Public Meetings Act, the board has in fact violated the act no fewer than 5 times. Most recently, it broke the law on August 14th when it failed to include public comment in its meeting. The board also failed to include public comment again on May 19th, just 5 days after it did that resolution, acknowledging its violations and promising not to do it again. What the board has not disclosed is how Board President Dinkup misused executive session to attack and harass me and two board members, Ms. Sullivan and Mr. Frieda. According to school board records, just prior to the March 29th board meeting, Board President Jim Dinkup had a conversation with Board Attorney Mr. Vito Gagliardi. Mr. Gagliardi reported this discussion at the meeting of May 14th on the public record. And what did they talk about? I quote from the public record, Mr. Gagliardi said, "The board president had concerns about potential ethical violations by board members. The essence of the conversation was whether that type of discussion would be appropriate in executive session or in public. Since we just spent some time going over the specific reasons you can go into executive session, they don't apply. So that would be appropriate to discuss publicly. The essence of the question was, should it be discussed in executive session or in public? And a public discussion of that nature is appropriate because there's no specific exemption under the Open Public Meetings Act. So that was my advice then, and that would remain my advice now. There's either an exception under the law or there isn't." End quote. Against advice of the attorney and paid for with tax dollars, Mr. Dinkoff nonetheless misled the board on the evening of March 29th into an impermissible executive session to discuss a matter that the law requires be discussed in public by his own attorney's advice given to him just hours earlier. He used the executive session to harass and intimidate two board members and to make false statements about me in an illegal executive session where I wasn't available to defend myself. For the record, I didn't do what he claimed. Mr. Dinkoff misused the powers of the board behind closed doors to harass and intimidate board members, two board members, the only two that it turned out voted against the school budget that same night, and then warned them to keep it confidential when it was not. This is bullying of the kind that our school district teaches children not to do and not to tolerate. After the attorney advised Mr. Dinkoff not to take that matter into executive session, he knowingly did it anyway. Since then, he's led the board to break the law again and again. You're the board members. I want to ask you, when are you going to conduct an independent investigation into this matter? And when are you going to acknowledge
what Mr. Dinkoff claims
didn't actually happen and enforce your bullying policy on yourselves?
Excuse me. We're just at 3 minutes now, please.
We're just at 3 minutes.
Yes, please. We're a little over.
So I should sit down and be quiet.
If you could please finish your thoughts, please.
Well, I would like to ask you and Mr. Gagliardi for a response to my comments. These are serious legal violations. The county prosecutor has already found you in violation. And yet, since you passed your resolution on May 14th to stop doing this, you've done it again and again. You have on your agenda tonight approval of minutes from a meeting where you didn't follow the Open Public Meetings Act. I'd like a response, please. I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
If you're not going to respond, please tell me you're not going to respond. Please have that courtesy.
We'll take it under advisement, Mr. Corcadillos. Would anyone else like to address the board, please? Okay. If there's no one else that would like to address the board this time, I'll ask the school business administrator to make her report.
In your board packet, there was correspondence in reference to the CAP award for the elementary school, and there was a board motion to accept that grant. You will not find the board secretary and treasurer's report at this time. We are undergoing the fiscal audit for the year end. There will more than likely be audit adjustments, and those June reports will need to be amended. Therefore, July and August will follow at the next board meeting. The next board scheduled board meeting is October 22nd.
Is that all?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have an addendum to go over, or is that?
It's, yes. I handed it out this evening.
Do we do that under the BA report, or do we?
I
don't know.
Yes, I could do that. There is an addendum also to this evening's agenda to approve the minutes of August 14th, 2012 that were included in your board packet, to approve the August 27th both regular meeting minutes and the executive session meeting minutes that were also part of your board packets. That will be action item 13BA-006.
Thank you. And at this time, we'll start our committee reports.
Excuse me. Don't we have to vote on it? Don't we have to vote on these? Don't we have to make a motion to?
Oh.
I mean, yes, we did the addendum, but now we have to vote on them or give our thoughts, whatever.
To take, so
Okay, we'll take a roll call vote then.
Somebody move it, please.
Motion and second on the minutes, right?
Oh, yes.
So motion and second.
Would you like to move the minutes, please?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Roll call vote.
Mr. Frieda?
We're going to go right into discussion, right into the... Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. A discussion?
No, I just... Sometimes,
is there any discussion?
Sometimes I say any discussion before we vote, that's okay. All. It may be moot, it may not. I don't know if it's perfunctory or not.
No, Madam Chair, if I may, if the board member wants to discuss it, then we should hold off on the roll call. And
absolutely. Is there any discussion?
No, I'll comment on it. I'll comment, no.
Do you have a comment?
I'm going to vote... Make my comment against the minutes, but it's not a discussion, it's an explanation.
Okay. Okay, then roll call vote, please.
Mr. Frieda?
As it relates to the 8:14 minutes, for me, I cannot in good conscience vote yes to these particular meeting minutes. While I believe the omission of the public comment at that meeting was unintentional, the fact remains that we did not adhere to the Open Public Meetings Act, nor did we adhere to our very own bylaws, 0167. So I exercise a no vote on August 14th, yes to August 27th.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Cresti?
Yes to August 14th, and I'll abstain on August 27th since I wasn't here.
Oh, yes, motion carries.
Okay.
A question on the agenda. Under report of the superintendent of schools, we've got presentations listed for the enrollment and suspension reports. Are we going to just enter those or discuss those?
Mm-hmm. We just enter them. Okay. I didn't have any. That's okay. There's no suspensions at all. So.
I thought we should be commenting on it, but I'm not certain.
Okay, committee reports. Mr. Sturgis, Facilities and Finance.
Okay. Facilities and Finance Committee did meet in the month of September. We met on Monday, September 17th. On our agenda for the committee meeting, we had several items to discuss. It was a long night. One of the primary discussions was with our attorney, Greg Ricciardi, regarding some outstanding DEP fines relating to the Vaught House mothballing and subdivision. I'll talk about that in more detail in a minute. We discussed pay to participate for sports and activities for the fall. We discussed AppliTrack, which is a human resources applicant tracking system. We discussed the superintendent's goals and objectives as they relate to facilities and finance. We reviewed some comments from the public regarding questions and transfers of funds from the closing of the 11-12 operating budget. We had a discussion about prioritizing and status of our long-range facilities plan. We had an update on the status of the audit being conducted by our accounting firm. We discussed busing, routes, expenses, and potential opportunities for identifying efficiencies and cost savings going forward. And we discussed payment of invoices to our environmental vendor, closing out a round of environmental testing and remediation that was conducted in all four schools over the past 18 months. I wanted to bring particular attention to FF025 and FF026. FF026 is a rate setting for fall athletic programs for four sports. And FF025 was the topic about settling the DEP fines. I wanted to give some detail on the background of the DEP fines. The initial event that sparked the fines being levied by the EPA predated many of those on the board and maybe some of those in attendance. But this goes back to December 29th, 2006. and I'm going to read the background here to make sure I get it right. On December 29th, 2006, the NJDEP issued a notice of civil administrative penalty assessment to the district regarding violations relating to the mothballing of the vault house and stream encroachment and wetlands permit violations in connection with the submission of paperwork by the engineering firm hired by the district. The name of the firm was Shore De Palma. The district corrected the violations and believed the process was finished. However, it was not. In April 2011, NJDEP offered to settle this matter by reducing by half the original penalty assessment of $46,500 to $23,250. So the initial assessment was $46,500, and the settlement offer in April of 2011 was $23,250. However, no agreement was reached by the parties. In the past year, a notice of a court date was sent to the district and shared with the BOE attorney. He informed Dr. Clark that he's been working to negotiate a further reduction of the penalty, if possible. The attorney advised that the payment at this time would limit further legal costs in connection with the matter and resolve this long-standing issue. Dr. Clark shared this with the Finance and Facilities Committee and made the Dr. Clark shared this with Finance and Facilities, and Finance and Facilities made the recommendation. Finance and Facilities met with Greg Ricciardi, our attorney, listened to the account of the events, and we recommend that the payment be made at this time from the 11-12 budget funds. A final settlement agreement will be prepared, summarizing the settlement and dismissing the action. Regarding this item, if we want to have discussion or questions and answers, should we do it now or should we wait until the action item is removed?
It seems appropriate to do it now.
Yes, we have to put them on the floor, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if a board member needs to have a question answered before he or she is ready to vote on it, I'm happy to help.
Okay, a little bit of additional information on here. There is a matter of timing. Time is of the essence. We have a limited window of time to act on this settlement offer. Our attorney has gone back to negotiate a better settlement, so you'll notice the action item is that we're recommending we set aside funds of $20,000 in order to pay this fine. Just to give you some background, some of the discussion we had in committee is nobody likes this fine. We don't feel good about a school district being fined for violations that we corrected and satisfied the DEP. But the fact of the matter is that the violations did exist. They're obviously legitimate penalties. And right now, the only options available to us to settle the fines is to negotiate a settlement payment and pay it.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So these fines are a result of the engineering firm that we hired that didn't do the job that we hired them to do?
It appears in part, yes. The fines related to, actually I took some notes when we met with our attorney. For example, one of the issues that we were in violation was failure to file an archaeological plan. This is when we were mothballing Vaught House, and also relating to subdivision of the property. There was also an issue with regard to the buffers relating to the stream. That was the basis back in 2006. So the notice was given, and I believe at the time the board thought the issue had been corrected because they had made good on the violations. They had corrected them. It just took a long time to work through the process, and it came back much later, and then it got picked up again and went back into negotiation. There was some issues with turnover of staff, both at the DEP and the Deputy Attorney General's office, and probably likely here at the district. But at the end of the day, we're 6 years plus later, and now it's coming to a head, and we need to address it.
I think there's a couple other things important to add on in there, that the original fine was around $48,000, I think, in that range there.
$46,500.
But when the matter was brought to the attention of the board, that the board, by reacting immediately to it at the time, kept the fine from increasing. So on the advice of attorney, that was helpful.
Yeah.
Also, there's a possibility that we could go back after the firm.
That's what
However, the
ask.
Firm has gone out of business. They don't have an insurance policy. basically all we'd be doing is extending the time for the settlement, which might further exacerbate the situation with the state. So it seems on the advice of counsel that our best alternative right now and least expensive alternative right now would be to bite the bullet and pay the fine, or we could go and look to fight it a number of different ways, all of which would be likely to incur significant legal expenses far outweighing the fine as it exists in regards to the settlement. I think our attorney's done a rather excellent job in negotiating it down for us.
So there's no merit to pursuing it at this time?
We didn't believe so after consulting with our attorney and getting the background on the origination of the fine and the negotiations and the settlement offer.
So. If I may, to simply augment what you said, that Greg Ricciardi, you're talking about as an attorney from my firm. I'm not an environmental lawyer, obviously. The idea of really from our standpoint, I think maybe one letter and a couple of phone calls, reducing the fine to what it is, anything beyond this would not be cost effective in our view. The folks who should have filed paperwork that wasn't filed or are not a viable source of recompense for you, and fighting this, A, would probably be unrewarding, and even if you were likely to be successful, which you're not, you're going to expend more than $20,000 to do it. So, for really a couple hundred dollars in legal fees, you got a $500,000 fine down to $20,000. We very much recommend this settlement to you. It is as cost-effective a result, given the time that's passed, the nature of the violation, and the posture of both the DEP and the AG's office, the best result, we believe, that you could possibly see.
Thank you.
I mean, from those of us on the Facilities and Finance Committee, as well as our superintendent and our business administrator, we tried to find whatever angles we thought we could, and we discussed this in great detail for well over an hour with our attorney, and our recommendation now is that we pursue the settlement offer at $20,000. So that's the end of my committee report, and with that, we have 20 action items to move.
Kevin, were you going to mention something about the sports?
I just wanted to call it to your attention, and we can discuss it after we move it. I just wanted to point it out that we had discussed it and set rates for the fall during the committee meeting. I have 20 action items to move. It's FF021 through FF041.
Second. Discussion on 26. Can you just elaborate how you arrived at the fees for people in the audience?
Yes. A couple of years back when the district had put athletic programs and recreational programs as a ballot question, we're going back probably three budget years now. The budget failed, therefore the second question failed. And that year we didn't run any athletic programs or other activities within the schools. We were precluded from doing so because we put it on as a second question. The following year, our budget passed, and we were able to partially fund these activities with a 25% subsidy from the operating budget. And then this past year, in the budget building season, going into the spring, we again were able to carve out 25% of the cost of operating the programs within the school budget. So for this coming school year, 12-13, we have budgeted for 25% subsidy for both athletic programs and other programs that run, meaning there's enough participation and interest for them to run. So each year, the school, the BA leads this effort in working with our other staff and our coaches, identifies which sports look like they're going to run. We identify what expenses are involved in running the sport, like transportation, stipends for the coaches, potentially uniforms, fees, other expenses. Referee expenses is a primary one. Develop a budget for that sport based on the number of kids that are expressing interest, or some sports get maxed out. And then we come up with a 25% subsidy. What you see here is a result of the projection of the cost for these four sports after the 25% subsidy. So this is 75% of the projected cost to run these sports.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Could we just have a quick overview on FFO 38?
We had incurred additional out-of-district placement expenditures for students that were already placed out of district. In one particular situation, it was from a part-day program, a half-day program, to a full-day program. In the other two situations, it was additional services needed for those students out-of-district based on their IEPs. So we did incur additional expenditures. In addition to that, that were unbudgeted. In addition to that, we had students who were projected and budgeted to be in other LEAs, meaning other public school districts in the state, at a reduced tuition amount. And when the students' IEPs were completed, they ended up going out of district. So there was a shortfall in the out-of-district placement lines, the tuition lines. And this money is, this motion is taking money from the excess balance, surplus balance at the end of the 11-12 school year and appropriating it to specifically the out-of-district placement for private schools. This, again, is, as a reminder, is a refund from the state for expenditures that were expended during the 11-12 school year. The award is done in April, May, prior to the budgetary season, and we, under the rules and regulations, may appropriate it in the current school year to cover expenditures for those needs. So that's what this $170,000 is.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Okay, shall we vote?
Mr. Frieda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
And Mrs. Cresti?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Okay, so the next committee is personnel negotiations. Just note that any staff appointments are, of course, at the recommendation of the superintendent. All salaries are prorated to the effective date of employment and according to the current school budget. Okay, during the past, since our last meeting, we have met as a committee. We discussed various items as documented in the motions. But some of the highlights are we discussed AppleTrack, which is a new online service for employment. We also discussed the merit goals for the superintendent as they apply to the personnel committee. And we discussed some of the upcoming evaluation issues. With that being said, we have some motions, some items to move. And that would be PN 053 through PN 076. So let's move those items. Okay. Yeah.
Second.
Discussion?
I actually have a question on action item 13PN063. I'm aware that the director of special services will be going on a maternity leave or child rearing leave, and I wanted to know what the plan is while she's out on leave.
Right now, she's going to be available and basically working from home. We may need to discuss in personnel if we need to hire an interim for a time period. Frankly, I've been trying to avoid that and yet make sure we're covered because interims in special services are not only hard to find, but they're very expensive.
Thank you.
Anything else? Any other discussion? Okay. Should we take a roll call vote?
Mr. Frieda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
And Mrs. Cresti?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Okay, policy and curriculum, please.
The Policy and Curriculum Committee did not have an opportunity to meet in person this month with the majority of back-to-school nights, as well as other evening meetings. We did have some correspondence via email, and we intend on meeting again in early October. There are a few action items tonight to point out. The first is action item 008. The board is going to be adopting the purchase of some student vocabulary materials for grades 6 through 8. This is the Sadler series. There has been some discussion with the high school to look at how we can align our vocabulary for our students as they transition to the high school. And this is a particular program that the high school also uses. There is also some additional discussion to see how we can possibly purchase vocabulary materials for the lower grades. And at this time, we haven't designated a particular series, but our director of curriculum, Ms. Philippe, is looking into other types of programs that we might be able to adopt later on this year. Action item 009, the board secretary mentioned previously tonight. And action item 13PC010, that refers to a new bylaw that the board has been talking about adopting on core values and having a process guardian at the meetings. I understand from the public that this particular document wasn't put online. However, it's my understanding from the way the policies are put through the board that once the first draft is presented to the board, changes can be made between the first and second draft. And therefore, I don't see at this time any issue with having this on the website tomorrow so that the public has the opportunity to read through the bylaw and then has the next month to peruse it and think about their questions and bring them to the next board meeting on October 22nd. I would also encourage all board members, since the draft just went out, to take the time to look through it because our committee will be meeting again in October. So I already have some comments from some board members. If anybody else has any comments and language changes or ideas, please forward them to me and I will present them at the next policy and curriculum meeting.
Thank you.
I have a related question. What do we typically do? I know we get the first readings and we get the second reading sent to us in the packet. And obviously you have to read the first reading, make your comments so that you can vote on it intelligently at the second reading. Do we typically post the first readings?
I'm unaware that because prior to being on the board, I had looked for information online for particular policies and I'm unaware that they were put up. I think it's a good idea. I think it's something that we should do. I don't know if we need a particular policy around that.
I'm not aware of one, and I haven't seen it done before, but I agree it's a good idea, and we can do that.
I mean, in the spirit of transparency, it can't hurt us.
Exactly.
It's better we do that and let the public see it.
I'm comfortable with that. I can do it. I think it's a good idea.
It doesn't have to be tomorrow, I'm just saying.
I think it should be tomorrow.
I can get
doesn't
it up.
Have to, doesn't have to be tomorrow.
I can get it up tomorrow. It's all right. I can put it on the website.
Okay. So I'd like to move action items 008 through 010.
So moved. One second. Discussion? Seeing none, we will call move.
Mr. Frieda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
And Mrs. Cresty?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Okay, communications, please.
I have nothing to report at this time. We were not able to meet because of all the back-to-school nights. Dr. Clark incurred, so her visibility and frequency and appropriateness is already on its way. you know, we plan on meeting with her and then the things that have been outlined in her objectives and the things that we've committed to as a committee, we'll start to work on that over the course of the next 6 months.
Can I have a second? We had talked, I think it was last month, about talking to the Clinton Township newsletter about getting onto the calendar section for the next meeting. Do we know if that conversation took place? Dr. Clark, did you have a chance to talk to Julie Flynn at all?
No, but she's been very helpful, and I'm sure if I ask her, she'll be able to do that. So you'd like me to put our meetings?
On the back of the Clinton Township newsletter, there's a little calendar that talks about when the next town council meeting is, and I've noticed that typically board meetings are not put onto that communication, so if we could...
Board of Adjustment on that.
But they don't have the Board of Ed, so...
I will send her an email tomorrow. She's been really great about working with us, so...
That would be great. Thanks.
Thank you. Anything else under communications?
No, nothing.
You know, I just didn't take enough time earlier to thank everybody that worked on the merit goals presentation. Let's take a moment now. It's part of communications, I think. In particular, Marie Grant, Dan Tiernan, Rachel McLaughlin, everybody here put their time, effort to put together the presentation. This is a new day in New Jersey. We didn't have a lot of guidance as to what to do, so we were really swimming in uncharted waters here, and Marie Grant especially took the bull by the horns and put together a presentation with not a lot to go on. And for Dr. Clark, too. Dr. Clark also guided us through this, so we appreciate the effort by everyone. Thank you.
I'd really like to thank the board, and I'd like to make particular note that the county really spent a lot of time on the student achievement goals with me. They really worked on past New Jersey S scores, averaging, increases, decreases, looking at it very carefully, so it was very measurable for the board. They were very concerned about making sure that that was done. And setting, the idea of setting a baseline was very important, because we took that average and set it as the baseline so that anything that was within that norm of what we've done in the past was considered really meeting expectations and what you want in a superintendent, not really worthy of a merit goal, all right? That it had to be above that. To get the merit bonus. So I thank the board and really the county for working on that very carefully.
Okay, everyone, thank you very much. Okay, at this time, we will address any old business anybody would like to bring up?
Yeah, I have a piece of old business based on what Dan said earlier, so I'll say it's old business because we talked about it. About the superintendent giving, the full report. I think, you know, a lot of people listen to the audio, and Dan made a good point that maybe perhaps it would behoove the superintendent to, you know, enrollment, give us the enrollment report so people can hear it on the audio or who's ever in the audience, as well as the suspension report. It is what it is. If there's nothing there, but at least the community will know, at least those who listen on the audio will know, and it just, I think it's the right thing to do, and a good point that you made out. So in the future, if we can give the full report,
I will absolutely do a verbal report on that as well.
Thank you.
I haven't done that in the past in another district, but thank you. I will do that. No problem.
Thank you.
Any other old business, please? Seeing none. Any new business, please? No new business? All right. At this time, we'd like to have the second recognition of the public. Again, I will remind everyone who would like to address the board that there is a 3-minute limit on the time to speak. So please, anyone that would like to address the board at this time, you have the microphone.
Hi, Nick Orcadillis again. The matter I brought to your attention before is really serious about the violation on March 29th. The prosecutor already found you in violation at that meeting, and I just explained to you a further violation that I identified based on executive session minutes that were not available to the prosecutor at the time. The courts commonly hold that an elected public official, when they make a mistake, violate the law, there's a difference between doing it intentionally and doing it unintentionally. They also hold commonly that if you have been advised by competent legal counsel that something is illegal, and then you go ahead and do it anyway, that raises another issue, which all of you ought to consider, and I would suggest you all consult with your attorney about. If you've been advised by competent counsel that something is illegal and you do it anyway, you expose yourself to personal liability. That is, taxpayers have already paid for legal counsel to help you avoid doing something illegally. And if you do it anyway, the courts are probably not going to allow you to rely on public funds and public representation through your attorney. So what I would ask you all is, it seems clear to me, based on the school board's own records, that Mr. Dinkoff was aware, having been advised by Mr. Gagliardi, that going into that executive session on March 29th was a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. It didn't qualify. The question is, did Mr. Dinkoff advise each of you about the advice that he had been given by Mr. Gagliardi so that you too would have the benefit of that advice before you voted, and you all did vote, to go into executive session improperly? I suggest to you all that you look into that, because personal liability is a serious matter.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the board this time? Going once? Twice? No takers? Okay. All right. Then, if there's no one else that would like to address the board, we will go in. I am going to make a motion to go into executive session. That being said, I will read the statement. Whereas, while the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, et sec, requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public, NJSA 10:4-12, parens, B, close parens, sets forth nine types of matters that may be lawfully discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issue is permitted under, is permitted by NJSA 10:4-12, parens B, to be discussed without the public in attendance shall be discussed during an executive session. And whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public body is or may become a party, any matters falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that confidentiality is required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer, and the nature of the discussion described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality, is a legal matter, and that is underlined. The length of the meeting is thought to be approximately 1.5 hour, approximately 30 minutes. Action will not be taken upon the return.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I think two things. I think the phrase a legal matter, that's a, it's underlined because it's sort of a fill-in-the-blank thing. And I think the blank should be filled in as follows: a personnel matter and a related contractual discussion subject to the attorney-client privilege. A personnel matter and a related contractual discussion subject to the attorney-client privilege. I also think that it should be part of the motion, it must be part of the motion, that we make reference to when it is we believe this is going to become public. I can't tell you that because I have no idea, and I don't know if anyone here can offer that, but it's something that we must say. If we can't, then we'll say it, you know, as soon as possible, after a conclusion has been reached. That would satisfy the requirement. We have to say something as part of the motion.
Okay. So then the minutes will be released if and when the matter becomes appropriate, that the confidentiality ceases, or that the matter is concluded.
Nature of the discussion will be revealed in, with specificity once a conclusion has been reached as to the matter subject to the discussion. I think that's fine, but it should be part of the motion.
Okay.
I think Heather was writing furiously. Is that all right? Okay.
Okay. Second?
Second.
This will vote. For discussion, please. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Mr. Frieda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
And Mrs. Cresty?
Yes.
Oh, yes, motion carries.
And we do come back.
We will come back out to adjourn. Let's see.
Motion to come back and
reconvene.
Yes, we have a motion to reconvene the September 24th regular session of the Clinton Township School District Board of Education.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
Dan.
Okay. We're coming back from executive session. And at this time, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn our meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion is adjourned. A meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.